And talk radio WBOB.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. Just this past week, we were all participants, or at least witnesses, to that yearly gala extravaganza called elections. And whether the candidates that you are considering as the best choices could be running for local, state, or national offices, any one of these could hold the key to important legislation that affects your health and medical welfare. Sometimes that legislation is purely monetary, and other times directly responsible for what medical health care you can or cannot receive, regardless of whether you have or do not have health care coverage. For many of us, at least this year in Florida, we only really saw a two-party system with majority vote winners, or in the case of the amendments, a 60% majority being needed to pass the amendments. So we thought that in this next half hour, we could talk about the good, the bad, and the other choices as far as types of elections or selections that could be available to voters.
So let's start with a brief description of an election that you could say went awry. This being the presidential election between two candidates, Al Gore and George Bush. Actually, there were three candidates because this is where the technique of vote splitting came into play. The Green Party candidate, Ralph Nader, did the balance from Al Gore to George Bush and thus gave the win to Mr. Bush.
Had Mr. Nader dropped out when it was absolutely obvious that he was not going to win the election, it is known that Al Gore, rather than George Bush, would have taken the election and, in the case of the 2000 election, the presidency. So the real question of the day is, can a fair way of voting be created that overcomes voter splitting and its consequences? Now, before we can really get into it, let me pop a bubble of exuberant expectation. The Nobel laureate economist Kenneth Arrow devised a logical proof that stated that no voting system is perfect.
That, of course, leads us to a dilemma, and our next course is to look for a system that at least comes closest to perfect in order to eliminate or lessen the risk of vote splitting.
You are already familiar with range voting. Never heard of range voting? Well, maybe not, but you are very familiar with what it is. Let's give you an example of it. Most internet polls and consumer surveys use this. We range vote for movies, restaurants, and even athletes. For example, if you're asked to name your five favorite movies of all time, with number five your least favorite and number one your most favorite, then you are range voting. Another example is, who do you think are this year's 10 best college quarterbacks from 10 to 1?
What if we could come up with a system where you give a value to all of the candidates? Before we really delve into this, let me give you an example of a possible range in politics. Say that there are three parties involved, such as the 2000 election with Gore, Bush, and Nader.
Well, actually, there were quite a bit more. These included the Democratic candidates of Al Gore and Bill Brady, the Republican candidates of George Bush, Steve Forbes, and John McCain, and a slew of others from multiple parties, such as Ralph Nader of the Green Party, Pat Buchanan of the Reform Party, Harry Brown of the Libertarians, Howard Phillips of the Constitution Party, John Hagelin of the Natural Law Party. Am I boring you? Well, Earl Dodge, the Prohibitionist, and David McReynolds from the Socialist Party. In total, that is 12 candidates from all the parties with candidates.
Suppose that we then had a ballot that put all the candidates on a list and asked you to place three names from 1 to 3, one being your favorite candidate to become president and number three to be your least favorite of your three chosen candidates.
And suppose that we were assigned some value to each place. For example, 5 points to first place, 3 points to second place, and 1 point for third place. And then after the election, the total points were tallied, and the candidate with the most points won. Well, that could be considered a type of range voting. Would that be more fair? Would that counter the problem with vote splitting? To further elucidate this, let us take a really simplistic case. Let's say that there are three candidates for school librarian. Mr. Allen, we'll call him A, Mr. Bell, and Mrs. Cohen. In other words, we have three candidates who are calling A, B, and C. Each voter then gets a ballot with two boxes, one for their favorite candidate and the other for their second favorite candidate.
There are also five voters. Voter 1 chooses a two candidate in order of preference as A and C. Voter 2 chooses C and B. Voter 3 chooses A and B. Voter 4 chooses B and C. And finally, voter 5 chooses B and A.
Again, using a formula of 3 points for choice 1 and 1 point for choice 2, we get the following totals. A gets 6 points, B receives 8 points, and C, well, C receives 4 points. Thus, our winner and future librarian would be Mr. Bell. Now, this is a very simplistic example because there are only five voters. There could be an election of this sort where a candidate wins even if it got less favorite votes, as long as it got a lot more second-place votes.
You may think that the spoiler election is an anomaly, just a rare occurrence in politics, but it isn't. In the 2006 election, there were no less than five key races, which had Democratic money funding spoilers to hurt Republicans and vice versa.
So let's jump now to game theory. Now, this has less to do with real games than it has to do with statistics. My favorite example concerns a man calling a government agency to request needed documents. He's waited 30 minutes on the line for an actual person to come to the line. After explaining what he needs, the person on the other line asks him to hold a bit in order for the government representative to locate the papers. After several minutes of silence, the caller starts getting really stressed. Should he continue waiting? What if he just hangs up? And then right after that, the representative gets on the line. The longer the caller waits, the more he or she wants to hang up and try again. But the more time the caller has vested in the call, the harder it is to hang up. What do you do? Remain on the line or hang up and call again? Anyway, this is a type of game theory. But I know here we're talking about a better system of voting in elections. In a moment, we hope that you'll get our point.
Let us take the case of a beach which is 1,000 yards between entrances. Two ice cream stands wish to sell their wares on that beach, where is the best position for each of the sellers to build their stand.
Suppose one builds about 250 yards from the northern entrance. He would certainly get all the customers entering from the northern entrance itself, but only a few from the other side once the second seller positioned his stand. So the best place for the first stand to set up is right in the middle, so that the other stand has to position itself just south of the first stand. In this way, the stands will each get around one half the customers. Any other position would give one stand more customers than the other.
Same goes for political candidates. Neither can place themselves too far to the right or left, too far conservative or liberal. Otherwise, they risk losing too many potential voters to the other side. That is why so often we see both candidates or all the candidates hovering around some central point, one or more being just a bit more liberal than the center and another just a bit more conservative.
So in a debate, each candidate pussyfoots around the questions, answering as ambiguously as possible in order to gain the votes of the more middle of the field voters. Just like in our ice cream stands example, the candidate that captures the middle of the road voter will win the election. In fact, a famous pollster and strategist said that whoever captures the vote of a 47-year-old wife of a machinist living in Dayton, Ohio, will win a national election. In other words, she is the median voter.
Then there is something called independence of irrelevant alternatives.
You may right now be saying, whoa, whoa, hold on. What the hey is that? I know I did when I first heard that term.
Let me explain with a really good example I got from William Poundstone's book, Gaming the Vote.
According to a story, Columbia University's philosopher Sidney Morganbesser went into a restaurant in order to order some pie. The waitress told him that they only had blueberry and apple pie. So Morganbesser ordered the apple pie. A few minutes later, the waitress came in and said there was a third choice of pie, that being cherry. So Morganbesser said, in that case, change my order to the blueberry pie.
So why the adding a third choice made Morganbesser change his choice, not to the newly added pie, but to the other pie that he could have chosen in the first place? This is called independence of irrelevant alternatives.
So in other words, Al Gore's winning over Bush should not depend on the addition of a third party, that being, in the case of the 2000 election, the Green Party with their candidate Ralph Nader. So how can we find an election procedure that truly has independence of irrelevant alternatives? But there's a cog in the wheel of getting a truly fair election. In 1972, Kenneth Arrow received the Nobel Prize for proving, now listen to me, for proving that there cannot be an ideal voting system. We might as well pack our bags and continue on with our less than ideal voting system. systems that will never be ultimately fair. But wait, we can come up with a system that is the most ideal, even if it never gets to be perfect. This is like God's cord or the golden rectangle.
Then, one day on Oscar Morgenstern's deathbed, the mathematician received a paper from George A.W. Boehm that purported to have a simple voting system that could prevent the spoiler effects that we have been talking about today. Unfortunately, Morgenstern was so ill that the paper got filed away somewhere.
So what was Boehm's voting system? Well, it's indeed simple.
So, what is it already?
In a race where there is more than two candidates, you have two choices. You can cast a single vote for the person that you most wish to be elected, or you can cast a single negative vote for the person that you least wish to be elected. Sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? Let's take the Bush-Gore-Nader election, for example.
Within a normal system, say between Bush and Gore, the vote could be Bush 1,000, Gore 1,010, winner Gore. However, with Nader added to the mix, the vote could conceivably be Bush 1,000, Gore 990, and Nader 20, winner Bush.
However, with the Boehm system, if all of the Nader voters hated Bush rather than vote for Nader, they could cast a vote against Bush. Then the vote would be Bush 980, Dole 990, and Nader 0. Now, in that way, Bush would not win by vote splitting. Negative voting is especially useful when there are four or more candidates. Think what it might have done in the 2016 Republican primary with 17 different candidates. Trump might never have been chosen as the Republican candidate. On the other hand, maybe he would have been. Anyway, all of this is to show that we are in the United States needing a new form of elections. It's important to all our citizens. And remember, that is how we receive medical care in the United States. It is very dependent on who rules Washington. In other words, Obamacare or Trumpcare.
Before we end this subject of elections, let me just say that there are other voting protocols, such as approval voting, where we can vote thumbs up for none, one, or more of the candidate. In fact, you can vote for every candidate if you are comfortable with all of the candidates.
So in our example of Bush versus Gore versus Nader, using approval voting, we could end up with a total voting population of 2,010 voters, giving Bush 1,050, Gore 1,090, and Nader 205. If you happen to be interested in this subject, you could read the 342-page book that we mentioned before called Gaming the Vote. Or you could drop me an email at smcjacksmed@gmail.com, and we'll attempt to summarize it at best we can on a future show. Again, that's smcjacksmed@gmail.com. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. In the first half of the show, we talked about elections and how they can affect your medical care and your medical health. And in this half, we're going to start talking about some new breakthroughs that may help us with diagnosing cancer.
For many cancers, diagnosis is a long and challenging process. Maybe you have had a cough, you are a smoker, so maybe you are a little bit afraid that you might have something wrong related to smoking. So you go to see your physician who orders an X-ray. Within a short time, probably the same day or even in the same hour, you are told that the radiologist sees something.
Not to worry, she says. It's most likely not cancer. Nevertheless, you feel that lump in your throat. Then you're told that you will need to come back for further tests. Maybe another test is is ordered the same day, or maybe a test is ordered sometime the next week. Now the lump in your throat gets bigger. You start feeling anxious. Wouldn't it be good if we had a simple and quick lab test that could answer that single question, is it cancer or isn't it? Well, a new blood test, however, could offer that much-needed simpler and more effective diagnostic technique. It's called CancerSeek, and it actually has the potential to identify 8 different cancer types from one single blood sample.
First, let me tell you that this new study, researchers reveal how the blood test demonstrated high sensitivity and specificity for cancer detection in more than 1,000 people with the disease. That statement may not be very understandable if you do not know what sensitivity and specificity means in the diagnostic test.
First, the higher the sensitivity, the more likely that a positive test is really positive. In other words, the higher the sensitivity is, the more likely the diagnosis is the cancer. So sensitivity is the ability of a test to correctly classify an individual as diseased. And the higher the specificity is, the more likely a test will correctly classify an individual as disease-free. Worldwide, cancer remains one of the leading causes of death. It's estimated that by 2030, now that's just 12 more years from now, the number of cancer deaths will have risen from 8 million to 13 million. Early diagnosis is key to reducing cancer-related deaths. The earlier the disease is diagnosed, the higher the chances of treatment success.
Unfortunately, at this point in time, many cancers are not caught until the later stages, and this is largely due to a lack of fast and effective diagnostic tools. When cancerous tumors form, they release small fragments of mutated or damaged DNA and proteins into the bloodstream. These can act as markers for cancer.
The new blood test works by identifying these markers for 16 gene mutations and 8 proteins that are associated with 8 different cancer types. Now, these include breast, lung, colorectal, ovarian, liver, stomach, pancreatic, and esophageal cancers. Right now, there are currently no routine screening tests for people at average risk of the last 5 cancers that I mentioned. Here's a startling fact. Over 64.7 million American adults have mild, moderate, or even severe periodontitis. And in adults 65 years and older, the prevalence rate of all gum diseases increases to over 70%.
Gum disease is characterized by inflammation of the tissue surrounding the base of the teeth or the gums. And in its more advanced stages, periodontitis might lead to the destruction of the gums and even begin to attack the bone that holds it in place.
Living with the symptoms of periodontitis is hard, but researchers from the University of Helsinki and Helsinki University Hospital, both in Finland, in collaboration with colleagues from the Karolinska Institutet in Sweden, have shown that the bacteria to blame for this disease might also be able to cause certain types of cancer, specifically pancreatic cancer. The name of the bacteria is Treponema denticola, which is the bacterium that causes most periodontitis, and it may also be responsible for the development of some types of cancer. But it's not the only bacteria involved in periodontitis. Others include one strain of Actinobacillus and several types of Porphyromonas bacteria.
Since periodontal disease is not caused by one microorganism, antibiotic use for elimination of one pathogenic species is simply not possible. In the best case, antibiotics will suppress some subgingival bacteria over a limited period of time. These include tetracycline, ciprofloxacin, metronidazole, azithromycin, penicillin, and clindamycin. Sometimes combination of medications such as metronidazole with amoxicillin or ciprofloxacin have actually been successful in the treatment of advanced periodontitis.
Anyway, let's get back to gum disease bacteria and cancer tumors. The research noted that Treponema denticola and some gastrointestinal cancers, such as pancreatic cancer, share a particular enzyme, Treponema dentolica chymotrypsin-like proteinase, more easily called TDCTLP. This enzyme, which was observed in certain cancerous tumors, is typically found in the mouth and acts as the main boosting agent in the development of gum disease.
So they look for a link between the bacterium responsible for periodontitis and the development of cancer tumors elsewhere in the body.
Could this bacteria in your mouth predict whether you'll develop esophageal cancer?
They found that TDCTLP can activate other enzymes, ProMMP8 and ProMMP9, that cancer cells use as a vehicle that allows them to encroach on previously healthy cells. Not only that, there was evidence that TDCTLP GLP shows immune modulatory activity that can have a crucial role in promoting and regulating carcinogenesis.
What this means is that the TDCTLP enzyme is also able to impair the response of the immune system through its action on enzyme inhibitors, which happen to be molecules that normally slow down enzyme activity when required. Again, in other words, TDCTLP enables cancer-friendly enzymes to do their worst.
Looking at the study results, the researchers concluded that the inflammation characteristic of periodontitis may make it easier for harmful bacteria to travel to other parts of the body, allowing their virulence factors, such as CTLP, to act as a booster for cancer cells.
This is the first time that the virulence factors of the central pathogenic bacteria underlying gum disease were shown to be able to spread from the mouth to other parts of the body, most likely in conjunction with the bacteria, and take part in central mechanisms of tissue destruction that are related to cancer. Now, although the CDC noted that this disease affects more men than women, there was a significant proportion, that is over one-third of the adult females in the U.S., who live with periodontitis. And recent research has shown that women with gum disease are also more likely to develop breast cancer.
Other type of cancer that exhibited a significant association with gum disease were lung cancer, gallbladder cancer, melanoma or skin cancer, and breast cancer. A new discovery was the association between periodontitis and gallbladder.
The researchers found a strong link between gum disease and breast cancer, lung cancer, and gallbladder cancer in the case of women who smoked. We talked about treating gum disease and the difficulty of using just antibiotic therapy. How about using bioceramic material? Now, it's known that P. gingivalis perishes on contact with the surface of silicon nitride, so researchers were looking into this material to use in the treatment of gum disease. First, silicon nitride degrades nucleic acids in bacterial cells.
One of the important effects they noticed was how after only 6 days of exposure dramatically reduced their ability to produce essential proteins and fat.
The researchers note how by changing the surface chemistry of silicon nitride, either by chemical etching or thermal oxidation, they could affect bacterial metabolism in different ways. Now, getting back to CancerSeek, remember CancerSeek, the blood test for various cancers? The researchers found that the test was able to identify 70% of the cancers, with sensitivity ranging from 33% for breast cancer to 98% for ovarian cancer. Sensitivity ranged from 69% to 98% for the five cancers that currently have no routine screening tests. In terms of specificity, the tests yield an overall result of more than 99%.
It is important to note that this very high specificity was essential because false positive results can subject patients to unnecessary invasive follow-up tests and procedures to confirm the presence of cancer. What is more, the researchers found that their test was able to pinpoint the location of tumors for 83% of patients.
Well, here's hoping that this research comes with good results earlier than later.
If you or any of your family members have been prescribed any medication that are being rejected or denied at the pharmacy, and you feel that the medication is both appropriate and medically necessary, then you need to make your voice known. Contact your state and federal representatives and tell them what's happening. It is only with this that we can right the wrongs that are being perpetrated on a large part of our citizenry and their human rights when they are denied appropriate and necessary treatment.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at compassionatecarejacks.com. www.medicalmarijuana.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.